hurry. Mr. Fetter.
May I proceed, Your Honors? Your Honors, what is ultimately at stake in this case is whether a corrupt group of local officials can get away with bullying a local businessman in order to put him out of business and run him out of town.
Did it work or did he hang on?
It eventually worked outside of the lawsuit.
Okay.
Plaintiff has presented ample evidence, when viewed in light most favorable to the plaintiff, of a scheme orchestrated by Mayor Schauff and Police Chief Murray, and covered up to some extent by State's Attorney Wade.
Mr. Fetter, forgive me. Can you identify precisely the due process argument that you want us to consider, and specifically whether it extends beyond the refusal to consider the license renewal? In other words, is your argument that adequate procedures were unavailable or that the defendants engaged in arbitrary actions that shocked the conscience?
Well, I believe, in effect, I make both arguments. I would... the licensing issue was a big issue, and that is a procedural issue, as well as part of the shock to conscience scheme. But in terms of the shock to conscience, which I think, if I'm guessing right, is the central point of your question, I view it as in Reed versus Village of Sherwood, and where they talk about a similar set of facts. And they talk about this, harassing, intimidating, putting a businessman, put the businessman out of business in that case, and they talked about it as a form of takings, because the property right is more than just the right to have a license, but the right to use it to one's benefit. And all of the set of actions in this scheme were designed to take that license away from him. Does that answer the question?
Thank you.
Actually, as soon as you start talking about taking, I get worried, because the Supreme Court has held that takings claims can't be brought originally in federal court. They must be brought in state court. So how could we even consider a takings argument?
Your Honor, I confess that I haven't read the case that would...
This is a pretty well-established principle.
Yes, Your Honor.
There's no takings claim without a denial of just compensation. And since inverse condemnation litigation in state court is the way to seek just compensation, the Supreme Court has held that that's mandatory. Isn't that a problem?
It is a problem if I fully understand that case from that synopsis. I would agree that it may not be a takings. I still think that unless that Reed versus Sherwood Village is simply outdated, which it may be on this point, there's still a sense in which this is a denial of property right, such as suspending a license, and not necessarily taking a license is a denial of property right, and I don't believe that has to go through state court first. But I'm not sure about the law here.
I had thought your equal protection theory might actually work a little better in that respect. That is, that what you've offered is evidence of conspiracy among local officials, at least one of whom I gather has since gone to prison. Is that right?
Yes.
Essentially just deny Mr. Brunson and his business, quite literally, the equal protection of the laws.
Yes, and we've made that argument, and defendants have argued in response that when comparing to other liquor licenses in this small town of Bridgeport, where there's only a couple, they are not of the same class of liquor license. That argument has been put forward, which I think is a misleading, because as you'll find in document 104, Exhibit 3, attached to it, an expert testimony, in effect, from the special, it's not expert, it's a special investigator for the Illinois Liquor Commission, who said that for the purposes of the issues involved in this case, that is the way the license was treated, all three types of licenses get the same treatment under the law. So it's a misleading to say that they are separate.
Well, and there's no evidence, is there, that the mayor and the chief of police were going to wholesalers to try to keep them from selling to other retailers or licensees in the town, or that they were there actually was direct evidence, wasn't there, from Mr. Cessna that Mayor Schauff paid
Mayor Schauff paid Harshman,
yes, to bust up the business.
Yes.
Now, I don't know if that's true or not. None of us know how reliable any of these witnesses are. But
I understand.
But it is summary judgment, right?
Yes. And this is one of the points I'd even tried to make in my brief. I believe that sometimes the court below took the defendant's evidence as if it presented evidence as if it was true, and the plaintiff's evidence as if it was suppositional.
With respect to the absolute immunity defense, could you address the Killinger case, which seems to me, on the issue of license renewal alone, is pretty tough for you to deal with?
Well,
on absolute immunity for the mayor on the license renewal.
The issue of the way I would say this, Your Honor, is that the issue of license renewal was not an issue in the Killinger case, because the problem was that there was a fair. I'm sure you read that.
The facts were different, but the reasoning of Killinger, frankly, seems pretty broad to me, to reach this quasi-judicial role that, in this particular town, the mayor plays.
And if I may address it on the principal level, then I believe that, let me start with facts, I believe are distinguishable, so much distinguishable that the conclusion of law has to be tied to the facts, and I'm not sure it applies so broadly as to this case. Now, on the principle that's raised here, I would suggest maybe how far can a our complaint is that this mayor did not even review. He didn't do anything that is judicial. That his actions in this case were, if anything, would be classified as administrative. The analogy I would draw is if a judge who was the chair of the entire Seventh Circuit and was handling administrative properties of facts, if that judge were to say, "I don't want this complaint filed," tell the clerk, "I don't want this complaint filed. Don't file this complaint. Don't file this complaint," and so he never gets a hearing. Is that a judicial act, or is that an administrative act? And in the context of a mayor, most of what he does is executive and administrative, whereas a judge mostly does hearings and makes rulings and reviewings. It's a little misleading to think of that as just like a judge, because the mayor is constantly doing executive actions, and I believe this was an administrative executive action. He just said, "Burn up that license renewal. I'm not going to hear it."
In other words, Mr. Fetter, what you're saying is that Mayor Schauff, in his role as liquor commissioner, merely refused—he absolutely refused to consider the license renewal request at all, and he continued to do so beyond the expiration of the license, so that Mr. Brunson was forced to shut down. That's what you're arguing.
Yes, he was forced to shut down, and even when he finally got, and he didn't even have a written record. We have, again, that special investigator says about liquor law, who's very knowledgeable in liquor law, says you can't do this. And what law says, I think you'll find the law discussed in my document 104, the state law on liquor, is in, I think it's pages 27 to 29 of document 104. But the law says is this is not part of the purview of what a liquor commissioner does to not look at this renewal application. That's not one of the things that he has to be. He either has to say yes, here's the reason, or yes, or yes, say no, and here's the reason, so that the person can appeal. There was no written document for him to appeal.
So your argument is that because his conduct represented a refusal to exercise the function of his position rather than an exercise of it, absolute immunity would be inapplicable. That's your argument, right?
Yes. And a little stronger than that, a malicious refusal
with a
wrongful intention.
As part of a larger conspiracy.
Yes.
If you want to make it a little bit stronger than that. Can I ask you about the false arrest claim?
Yes.
In particular, there was fairly soon after charges were filed against Mr. Brunson, there was a probable cause hearing before a court, correct?
Yes.
Did the judge have before him at that time the report on Mr. Harshman's blood alcohol content level the night of the altercation?
No. The only way we obtained that through defense lawyer, they did not obtain that.
Did the police have it?
The police, as far as I know, did not have it.
Nobody had it.
Nobody. The hospital had it.
Yeah.
It was in the hospital's records. The Chief Murray has explicitly told in his police report that the Harshman said he got drunk and drunker and drunker. So he was well aware, and he was well aware they took blood tests, but it never entered the police report. Other things were omitted from that police report, too, I might add, and I don't take that police report as representative of what he knew. Do you have more questions, Your Honor?
You might want to save your time for rebuttal.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Petter. Mr. Blyer.
Yes, good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. I'm Joe Blyer. I'm here representing the Bridgeport defendants, is what's referred to in the district court, Mayor Shaw, Chief Murray, Bridgeport, and Lawrence County.
I would like to go right to the mayor.
Yes.
As liquor commissioner. Where the government officials in a city engage in a systemic effort to deprive one of its citizens of the right to peacefully operate a law-abiding business in that city, why shouldn't that type of arbitrary action raise concerns of due process?
Your Honor, I believe that the due process, is the argument of the equal protection in the due process. I realize this is summary judgment, so you must take everything in light most favorable to the plaintiff. Even taking that in light, I don't believe that the mayor or anybody was trying to necessarily run this man out of town or do his business harm.
We have evidence to that effect.
Well, there's evidence.
We have to accept it at this point?
I'm sorry?
We have evidence directly with respect to the mayor's expressed intent and with respect to several specific steps taken to try to accomplish that result.
Well,
we have to accept that on summary judgment?
You'd have to look that in my favorable point, but I don't think taking those facts to the thing. Of course, it was rebutted by the mayor whether or not he said those things.
I don't care if the mayor rebutted it.
I agree. Mm-hmm. Assuming those facts are true. Those issues that the mayor said, I'm going to run him out of town or I don't like, I don't believe those raise to a due process. They may be a state claim for tortious interference that the trial court did.
How about just denial of equal protection of the laws? As in, you did not address the plaintiff's reliance upon the Jynoski case out of Chicago on equal protection.
Correct. But
could you address that?
I think equal protection, as I understand it from the way it was addressed in the trial court and in our motion for summary judgment, it's this equal protection class of one.
Yes.
And there's two prongs. There was no other similar situation with the plaintiff in this particular case such that the class of one.
One can usually assume in this kind of situation, as in Gynoski, that nobody else was subjected to this kind of sustained harassment.
What you have here is a total refusal to consider the license renewal at all. You know, Brunson's able to open only after he appeals to the Illinois Liquor Commission. And even then, this mayor tried to order Brunson to remain closed. Total refusal to exercise the function of his position. And, you know, a systemic effort. It certainly looks like a systemic effort to utilize the mechanisms of the government to harass this man and drive him out of business. How can it be looked at in any other way?
Your Honor, I can look at it in the fact that, you're referring to the renewal of a liquor license under the Killinger case. The Seventh Circuit said that we've got, you know, it's absolute immunity for the mayor, and the mayor just did not act on it. I don't believe there's just any refusal. In fact, once the plaintiff in this particular case, Mr. Brunson, took on the process and went to the Liquor Commission, the license was issued. But as far as whether or not the license was not issued, and you can the testimony in the record was that the mayor was considering issues and working on it.
Did he ever identify what those issues were?
Your Honor, lived with this case so long, so I can't remember if it's in my conversation with him or in the deposition with him.
Don't tell me about your conversations with him.
I'm not going to. But he was, and I think it's in the record, it's not really any definite. I mean, I can't point to one thing that, yes, A, B, or C, that's what he was considering. But I believe in his testimony, he indicated that he was trying to do some other at issues that were concerning him.
He just totally refused to consider the license renewal request at all. If he had, in fact, decided to renew, or he had decided to deny the license, then maybe his actions would be protected. But that's not what he did. He just said, I'm not, just a refusal to exercise the very function of his position.
Your Honor,
I certainly can't get past that.
Your Honor, I respect this, agree with this just absolute refusal, and I think it's his elected commission. There's no question he did not act on it, but I don't believe there's anything in the record that shows that he just maliciously has been insinuated or anything of that nature, refusal to act on it. He testified that he was considering issues. They might be weak issues, but according to the law, he has the absolute immunity when it comes dealing when he's the liquor commission. And I understand that you reading the record that he just absolutely refused to act on it or refused to willfully refuse to issue it. I think the record is clear that he was being the liquor commission, that he was considering issues about this license, and being the liquor commission, he has absolute immunity when it comes to the issuance or not issuance or renewal or not renewal of the license. It may be harsh, but
if he had considered it, that would be the case. But here he just refused to do anything, to consider it or not consider it. It's very odd.
Your Honor, I will agree that it's an odd situation.
What remedy was available to Mr. Brunson on the eve of the expiration of his license when there'd been no decision yet?
Well, he could start the process that he did, and I must admit that I'm not up to speed on the process that he must go through the Liquor Commission to appeal it. But I do know
what is the appeal?
It's the, you go to the Liquor Commission.
But in most administrative law, you have to wait for a final order, some definitive decision, before you go to the next step. And if there's been no action, this looks like a great way to put somebody out of business for a while.
As I understand your question, and when you were explaining to me, I think I understood it, is that on the eve of the license, just before it goes out, he still has a license.
Yes.
So there's nothing for him to review or to take a process to review because he still has a license.
No, the reason that there's nothing for him to review is because the mayor hasn't made a decision on his renewal application.
And the night before he still is licensed, mm-hmm. I mean, theoretically, you could issue the license the day it expired, I would assume, under that question. And you're right, under your question, that he doesn't have anything to appeal, or he's not damaged or harmed until the license expires,
okay.
And it's not renewed.
If you feel better, then we'll ask the day after it expires.
Then
what remedy does he have if the mayor has not acted on his application?
He has a remedy through the Illinois Liquor Commission to start the process, which he did.
To appeal what?
The denial of the...
It wasn't denied. That's the problem.
Appeal
this is basic administrative law, and it's so basic that the mayor's failure to act winds up looking like a way to completely stymie the plaintiff's rights.
Well, first, I think the mayor did have some concerns, but to answer your question, the day after, he then has a process because his license was not renewed, and for whatever reason he thought, and that's what he did. He started the process through the Liquor Commission and Mr. Mendendahl, and also then the way the Illinois Liquor Commission works is while it's on appeal, he is given a license, or he is given the right to operate while his appeal process, administrative process, is going on. And that's what he opened back up in that process until the mayor did reissue the license at a later date after the fact. So I think, the due process, from listening to the questions of the court, the court seems to think that the absolute immunity afforded to a liquor commission is not a problem, but in this case...
It has not, we have not applied it to this kind of case where all we're dealing with is a failure to act on an application to renew. In the Reed case and in the Killinger case, we've got disciplinary efforts that feel a lot more like adjudication. A simple failure to act on what is basically a ministerial application, unless there's some issue and none has been identified, doesn't necessarily feel quite the same. But I see the red light's on for you.
So. I'm going to answer your question.
You can comment. That wasn't really a question, but go ahead and comment. And,
ma'am, one comment, Your Honor, in light of that. I believe that under the reading of the Killinger case, it's absolute. I mean, the court has some concerns about being a ministerial, but I believe under the thing that failed to renew the application is an absolute immunity to the mayor, who is the liquor commissioner, the only liquor commission. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Blyer. Mr. Legner.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, counsel. Brett Legner on behalf of defendant appellee Lisa Wade. Your Honors, this court should affirm the grant of summary judgment to defendant Wade on Brunson's Fourth Amendment false arrest and 14th Amendment equal protection claims for two reasons. First, Wade was entitled to absolute prosecutorial immunity. And second, in the alternative, Wade was entitled to qualified immunity. And Brunson made no effort in his reply brief to argue that either immunity did not apply to Wade. And I'd clarify that the due process claim is not brought against defendant Wade. Turning to prosecutorial immunity is absolute and applies to Wade's activities in her capacity as Lawrence County State's attorney that were core prosecutorial functions. Those activities directly relevant to her ability to conduct a trial, or those activities that are intimately associated with the judicial phase of the criminal process. Here, the undisputed evidence was that Wade's only involvement with plaintiff regarding the August 7th incident was as a prosecutor. She reviewed the investigation file that was completed by the local police, Chief Lee Murray. She discussed the completed investigation with Murray to determine whether to bring charges. She determined what charges to bring, and she presented the state's evidence at the preliminary probable cause hearing before the state trial judge. Those are all core prosecutorial duties involving the judicial phase of the proceedings and were directly relevant to her ability to conduct trial. Brunson contends that Wade lost her prosecutorial immunity by participating in the investigation into the incident, but the facts do not support that, as the district court correctly found. Wade did not take part in Murray's investigation. Murray gave Wade the completed investigation. Wade did not advise Murray as to what evidence he should collect. Wade did not play the role of a detective interviewing witnesses and gathering evidence or looking for clues. The argument that Wade declined to call in the state police to investigate does not mean that Wade investigated the matter. It means she stayed out of the investigation. Ultimately, even if Wade did investigate the matter, she would lose prosecutorial immunity only with regard to that investigative conduct. But that conduct, and specifically the decision not to ask the state police to investigate Markshoff's involvement, is irrelevant to a false arrest claim, in which Mark simply was not involved, and at the very least, dramatically cabins the protection claim. And then this leads me into qualified immunity, which I'll turn briefly to. The plaintiff does not cite any cases clearly establishing that Wade's conduct violated federal law. And then into the merits with regard to the false arrest claim, there was probable cause. Wade was presented with conflicting witness statements in the police report, and she chose to believe one. With regard to, and that's not, that doesn't mean there was no probable cause, and that's certainly not a constitutional problem. And with regard to the equal protection claim, Wade did not treat similarly situated people differently with no rational basis. She did not ask the state police to investigate Markshoff's involvement. Well, she didn't ask the state police to investigate anybody's involvement. She didn't treat anybody differently in that regard. And, moreover, there was no irrationality to that decision because Brecht is clear that once local police start investigating a matter, the state police will not come into the investigation, as Murray was told when he asked the state police about the investigation. If your honors have no questions, I'd ask that this court affirm the grant of summary judgment to defendant Wade. Thank you very much.
Thank you, counsel. Anything further, Mr. Petter?
Thank you. If I may have a brief rebuttal for Ms. Wade. first, technically a reply brief I don't even have to make, much less that's not a waiver. Secondly, it is in the framing of the case that carries everything. We have testimony from Officer Dooley, which opposing counsel did mention. That's document 104, number 2, exhibit 2, in which he talks about specific conversations with Wade before the investigation. And you've probably read that in my brief. But those conversations, when you read them in a rational way, they show that she knew that Murray had a conflict of interest. She knew that that Murray wasn't going to report. Not only had a conflict of interest hypothetically, he wasn't going to put it in his report. She apparently asked him because she told Officer Dooley the reason she didn't call in the state police was because he wouldn't put it in the police report. Now, Murray admitted he didn't tell the state police about the conflict of interest. That isn't why he contacted them. If he told them about the conflict of interest, surely they would have stepped in to help in this case. And if the state police had been brought in, then it would change the whole demeanor. It would have exposed, just as when the ILCC sent its special investigator, they found out what a crook Shoff was. If the state police had come in, they would have seen what a nest of a gang of crooks they had running this city and harming Mr. Brunson's business. And that's saying it in generalities, but that's the essence of our argument about why Wade should be involved. Granted, she was only involved in the form of a cover-up, but it made it possible and enabled the bullying that was going on by the city officials. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you very much. The case is taken under advisement.